Yeah, it is. It is the Rundown. Welcome in. ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Chase McCabe alongside Ryan Porth. We are at our home studios while Elijah Campbell is hanging out at the Wholesale Inc. studio powered by RumbleOn.com. Hope you're having a good Thursday so far. Ryan, what's up?
What's up, Chaser? How are we doing this morning?
I'm feeling good, man. I am feeling good.
Can I ask you a question before we get into the show?
Sure.
What does bring the hotness mean?
Bring the hotness, man. Just bring the energy. Bring the heat. Just
okay.
Be beautiful on these airwaves. I don't know.
We're always beautiful. I mean that's never a question.
Got faces for radio.
Well, thanks,
Elijah.
I just got a face. The face. That runs the place.
Maybe.
Anyway, it's Thursday. Days are running together. I mean, this is what happens. I mean, I think if I'm doing my math correctly, this is now the 1 month anniversary of me doing a show from home. So,
congratulations, Chase. Congratulations on your anniversary.
Thank you so much. Big party tonight. But yeah, I'm going stir crazy.
Dak Prescott party?
No, I'm not gonna be stupid. Like, well, sure, yeah, I'll have a party. I'll invite like 50 of my friends, and then I'll lie about it and say, no, we only had 10.
Yeah,
and get mad at people for asking about it.
Okay, all right, I'll take your word for that.
That's the game plan. So we wrapped up, Ryan, our Nashville sports bracket yesterday, and it was fun. Great turnout with the voters in the championship round. Pecorine versus Steve McNair, and as I said yesterday, I don't think there could have been a better championship match. I mean, this is the way that it needed to be. And Steve McNair is the champion.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, it looked like it was going to be Pecorine. And then it looked like it could be Steve McNair. And then it got close again. And then Steve McNair wins 55-45.
Yeah, it did. And it was fun to see all the different people jumping in on promoting the bracket and, you know, pleading people to either vote for Steve McNair or Pecorine. I know a lot of the Preds individuals and the Preds Twitter account as well were all over it. I believe the Titans blog, Music City Miracles, was all over it as well. You know, the one thing that I'll say is for the people in our Twitter mentions that were saying, who is Pecorine? You need to climb out from under your rock.
Yeah, that's clearly a transplant that just hasn't paid attention.
Right. Right. So, or is just living in a football world and nothing else. So get out from under the rock that you're living under and educate yourself on Pecorine, who is the greatest Nashville Predator of all time to this date, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
So I do think it's interesting with all of this, because you're going to have debate. By the way, great gift game by you. I'm going to assume that was you that tweeted out, and the winner is Steve McNair running out of the tunnel.
Yeah, yeah.
How long have you been sitting on that?
It was probably I was sitting on that for about 30 seconds before I tweeted.
Oh, okay. I figured you would have had that somewhere, but I like that. That was a good one for Steve. So I know there's going to be a debate with this, and because one of my co-hosts and Darren Donnick and Chase declared a winner with 1% of the precincts chiming in, and he was wrong, and I am curious to hear what Darren has to say coming up at 10 o'clock of why he went that way. But anyway,
he declared Pekka the winner?
He did. He said Pekka's going to win. I'm telling you right now that Pekka's going to win.
Okay.
So I just think, I look at it like this. I voted for Steve McNair. Here's why. He was the first hero sports-wise in this town professionally. I know there Vandy had some guys, but the true, like with the Titans coming to town, the Predators coming to town, Steve McNine was the first guy that I think everybody rallied around. And maybe you can make the argument for Eddie, but just with the toughness and what he did in the Super Bowl and games after that, I think that was the first time that you really saw somebody take command from a sports standpoint of this town, and you don't forget that. That leads into some other things that we're going to talk about, but you just don't forget that. Now, to Pekka's credit, Pekka's the first homegrown guy that you could really say, well, not the first, but he's a homegrown guy that you can say really took command and control of a city. Agree? I mean, Shea Weber did it. But then Pekka did it to at a different level.
Yeah, I would say so, especially at the time of Shea Weber getting traded to Montreal. I think you could talk about those two on an even playing field. But the fact that Pekka played the way he did in the 2017 postseason and Shea Weber was in Montreal, PK Subban on the Preds roster at that point, I think that elevates Pekka in this conversation.
Right. And Shea Weber actually going to join us today at 11 o'clock, or I'm sorry, at noon on Darren Donica.
Very cool.
Yeah, so it'll be good to catch up with him. So it was a tough decision for me. Like I wanted to vote for both. I mean, there is a legit argument for Pecorino and Steve McNair, but you can only pick one. And that was ultimately why I leaned towards McNair. But it was a very, very soft lean. It was very, very close. You know, if I sat there and talked it out with you for long enough, I'd probably flip-flop about 70 times.
Oh, totally. We mentioned yesterday that trying to vote on that question of McNair or Pekka was the equivalent of a parent trying to decide how to answer the question of who is your favorite child, you know?
Right.
And I think you can make a case. You can make a case for both. Totally, like very easily. And I totally agree with what you're saying about Steve McNair. What I'll say about Pecorine is, you know, Steve McNair, what, six seasons in an actual Titans uniform? You know, he played for the Tennessee Oilers and the Houston Oilers before they became the Titans. But I don't feel like the Tennessee Oilers really connected with this city until the franchise became the Titans. Would you agree with that?
Yeah,
so
I totally agree.
So we're talking about six seasons in a Titans uniform for Steve McNair, if I remember correctly. 99, 2000, 2001, 02, 03, 04, 05. Seven seasons. Pecorino, and then he went on to Baltimore. And Pecorino is doing what he's doing in a Preds uniform and exclusively in a Preds uniform. So I think Pecorino, the fact that he opted to stay here long-term and has achieved what he has achieved with the consistency. I think you can make a case for Pecorino in that realm, that he's done it longer in this town than Steve McNair did it. And I think another thing to think about in this conversation is that would you agree that Pecorino is a better goaltender within the National Hockey League, or when Pecorino was in his prime, a better goalie within the NHL than Steve McNair was a quarterback within the NFL?
That is a very, very good question. And
I think the answer is easy on that one. Well, yeah. You know, McNair won co-MVP in 03, which was phenomenal. But
he did it with other things than just being a quarterback.
Mm-hmm. And he had some great teams around him, not to take anything away from Mac 9, but he had some great teams around him in those years that they, you know, the heyday that we call it. Pecorino has been the backbone of multiple playoff teams that may not have even sniffed the playoffs without him.
Right.
Especially early in his career. So I would say, and the fact that he's been in the Vezina conversation for a while, he won the Vezina back in 2018. There's a definite case for 35 in that conversation. And at the end of the day, I probably 50.1% lean Steve McNair over Pecorino, but man, is it close. It is very close. And I'm glad that at the end of the day in this bracket, that the championship matchup was McNair versus Rene.
I felt this is how I felt. When I hit vote for McNair, I felt guilty. And then I was like, if I had voted Rene, I would have felt the same way. That's just that's how close it is. That you know, and you can talk yourself out of either one or into either one, and that's how close, and that's what both of those guys met. Now, here's my question, and I teased this earlier in the week. Now that Steve McNair has won this thing, what has to happen for a member of the Tennessee Titans, the current Tennessee Titans, the young core, to have the same type impact as a player like McNair or Eddie George or some of the other legends that were in this bracket. Maybe nobody is ever going to have the impact like McNair, but somebody has to be in the same conversation as some of these guys. I just don't know how or when or, you know, what or who that's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Like I said earlier in the week, and I'll reiterate it, someone is going to have to do something in the ballpark of what Steve McNair did, maybe for longer, or win a Super Bowl. And
is Derrick Henry the closest to that right now?
Closest to it right now, yes. You know, I would see. I think of Derrick Henry, if he has a couple more great years, he is right in the conversation with Eddie George, especially if they continue to go into the playoffs. Man, it's so tough. Like, if Ryan Tannehill,
I don't think this guy has to be a quarterback necessarily.
No, but let's use Ryan Tannehill as an example in this conversation. Okay. If Ryan Tannehill takes the Titans to the playoffs 4 out of 5 years, so 3 of the next 4 years, Ryan Tannehill takes the Titans to the playoffs like McNair did for 4 out of 5, and Tannehill takes the Titans to another AFC championship and maybe even the Super Bowl, maybe they even win it, then yes, Ryan Tannehill, if we're doing this bracket in 10 years and it's the greatest Nashville athletes of the last 40 years, Ryan Tannehill is definitely a top 2 or 3 seed. The reason why I think they have to do it for longer is because Steve McNair is kind of that leader in the clubhouse, per se. And it's going to take something of significance to overcome that track record that Steve McNair built up in a Titans uniform. So maybe Tannehill has to take the Titans to the playoffs 7 of 8 years, something of that ilk, or actually win a Super Bowl, something that Steve McNair did not do. I think that's what it's going to take to overcome Steve McNair as being the guy in this town, or you find a quarterback that is an absolute bona fide superstar. It is the elite of the elite in the league. I'm talking Patrick Mahomes. I'm talking Aaron Rodgers in his prime, Drew Brees in his prime. And it's someone that this Titans franchise has never had. They've never had that quarterback.
Right. And those guys are so hard to find.
Right. But in this conversation, it might have to take someone like that, where he's a top 1 or 2 round pick in a fantasy football draft every year and is nationally renowned more than just being a great player for the Titans.
Here's really what I mean by this, and because I think Steve McNair is in a different conversation. I mean, that's a transcendent player. But when I look at our bracket and I look in the Elite Eight, Javon Kearse, he got there and he lost to McNair. Keith Bullock, he gets there, loses to Yosi. Wycheck, he goes all the way, that was a Sweet 16. He goes into the Elite Eight, loses to Shea. Chris Johnson, you know, he advanced a couple times. Eddie, of course, and Bruce Matthews. So guys like that aren't your number one, number two, number three on your roster, but we're still talking about Kevin Dyson. Kevin Dyson's another one. Like, we're still talking about Kevin Dyson that had 3 solid years here before he got hurt. I mean, Wycheck was early on in the run. It's finding guys like that, you know, years down the line. And we talk about Chris Johnson, obviously, but we talk about him for the 2,000-yard year.
Mm-hmm.
That's one season.
Mm-hmm.
He was good, but are there others that are on this team now? Like, how long are we going to talk about Delanie Walker, honestly? He's going to get mentioned, but, like, who's somebody on this team now? Like, are we going to bring up A.J. Brown 10, 15 years from now and be like, A.J. Brown, that was a great player for the Titans. That was a guy that really made a difference. That's the question, is finding those other guys.
Right. Well, it's going to take those other guys to get someone like Tannehill to McNair level.
Right.
You know, like I was saying with McNair having some great teams that he was a part of, all those names that you mentioned are names that were on that team or those teams with McNair and with Eddie George, the co-faces of the franchise, you know, our good buddy Derek Mason, a part of those teams as well. It's going to take a really good collection of players to get a quarterback like Ryan Tannehill to McNair's level. Tannehill isn't a Rodgers or a Breeze or a Mahomes who's going to make players around him that much better. He might make them a little bit better, but I don't see Ryan Tannehill as someone who is going to consistently throw open receivers and kind of like what Aaron Rodgers did for years with Greg Jennings or Jordy Nelson or now with Devontae Adams, Peyton Manning with Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne. Like I don't see Ryan Tannehill as being that quarterback. So it's going to take a collection of players that in 5 or 10 years when we do another bracket like this that are going to be featured in said bracket. Jeffrey Simmons, Kevin Byard, Rashawn Evans and or Jayon Brown. Maybe Adoree Jackson continues to improve over the next few years and we're talking about him in a better light than we even talk about Samari Roll. Like that's what it's going to take for Ryan Tannehill to accomplish what he needs to accomplish to overtake Steve McNair or get to his level.
Nate from Nashville chimes in on the text line. I would say a player would need to win a Super Bowl or two, plus going to the playoffs for multiple years. I don't know that just a Super Bowl, then a drop-off does it. I know that's really difficult, but that's what makes superstar players great. I agree with that.
Yeah. If a really good quarterback like Ryan Tannehill wins a Super Bowl, something that this town has never seen before, I think you're putting him in the conversation, Steve McNair, especially if it's not just a one-hit wonder. If, let's say, the next 2 or 3 years they make it to the playoffs and in that second or third year they win the Super Bowl, Tannehill is on McNair's level, especially if he's doing it at a clip similar to what he did when he entered in for Marcus Mariota.
It's the Rundown here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. When we come back, we'll turn this conversation to the coaches, because this is something Ryan and I have talked about, and somebody on this station disagreed with us. I ran a poll last night, Ryan, and I will give you the results when we come back. It's the Rundown on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
The Game Nashville is your NFL draft home for the much-anticipated event starting on Thursday, April 23rd. Tune in to ESPN 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9 for all of our coverage presented by Wyatt Johnson Ford, your Nashville Ford dealership. Going to be an interesting draft this year as it's going to be virtual. It's going to be streamed, and all the coaches and GMs and scouts, they're all going to be at their houses. So I'm curious just from that standpoint of what it's going to look like. So we will have you covered starting on April 23rd. Welcome back to the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth hanging out. So we brought this up, I guess it was at the end of last week, Ryan. We were talking about the coaches in the AFC South. And this has become a thing on the midday show on Darren Donick and Chase because Darren disagrees with us, blasted us for you know who we had number one and where we had Bill O'Brien. Now, this is, you know, because of that, I listen to his argument. I hear some of the things he's saying. I have talked to other people that some agree with me, some agree with him. You've talked to some other people. But what I think is interesting is I ran this poll last night on my personal account at Chase on Game on Twitter. Now, I understand that I am based in Nashville, Tennessee. And so there's going to be probably some recency bias. Bill O'Brien got 3% of the vote, and Vrabel got 77%.
Now, Nashville has a lot of transplants, Chase. So
they do, but 18% for Frank Reich. Come on, I'd give him a little bit more. I still would have Vrabel number one, but I would give Frank Reich a little bit more credit than 18%. Doug Marrone gets 2%. This was the end of our show yesterday of Darren Donick and Chase. Because I had to bring this up again, and we took little shots at each other. This was the end of the show.
I have serious doubts about Bill O'Brien is definitely in the coaching department. It has worked. Whether you like him or not, he has been a very, very good coach. He's been a total boob at the helm as a general manager. But you guys were talking about him as a head coach. and you totally missed the boat on that.
Yeah, those two playoff wins look really good.
Yeah, four out of six divisions. And how's that worked out?
Yeah,
Titans have won a division since 2008.
Vrabel has the same number of playoff wins as Billy O.
Yeah, do you knock Sean Payton, too, because they keep gagging in the playoffs?
He has a Super Bowl.
Okay.
Won the Super Bowl.
Okay. Yeah. You have two guys that have been head coaches for 2 years over a guy who's won the division four out of the last 6 years. Sure.
That there you go. You just made my argument.
Tons of sense.
There you go. Darren Donick and Chase, weekdays, 10 to 2. We love each other very much, as you can tell.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So, am I, and I know where you stand, so this is, you know, kind of a one-sided conversation on this. Now, I asked Tim Hasselbeck, my best friend and ESPN NFL analyst. I texted him last night, and I said, hey, you know, we've had this argument over the last couple of days. Darren's blasted me for ranking Vrabel ahead of O'Brien in the AFC South right now. And I said, I go Vrabel 1, Reich 2, Billy O 3, Marone 4. What do you think? He says, I think you have B.O.B. too low. He's been a very good coach, a terrible GM, but a good coach. And I came back with, the argument is two playoff wins in 6 years. I understand he's won the division, four out of six. But he has two playoff wins in those six seasons. Tim does make a decent point. Right, but it was T.J. Yates, Hoyer, etc. He's only had Watson for a little bit, and the division has been better since he has had the quarterback. What do you think about Tim's argument?
It's valid. It's valid, but also one of the playoff wins that Bill O'Brien has was against Matt McGloin and the Oakland Raiders.
Right.
So that's one of the playoff wins. And the other, you know, they won in spite of Bill O'Brien, you know, the Bills game in January.
You can make the argument that they should have beaten the Chiefs. Actually, there is no argument. They should have beaten the Chiefs.
They should have beaten the Chiefs, and they probably would have if Bill O'Brien didn't pee down his pants.
And that's exactly what happened. So while I get that you know, they've had Deshaun Watson for only a few years now, and he had to deal with T.J. Yates and Brian Hoyer and, you know, a revolving door of quarterbacks for a while, Bill O'Brien has still lost some of these games that they should have won when it comes to postseason play. So that's and Mike Vrabel, you can make the same argument that you want to say the division's gotten better. Okay. Well, even though the Titans haven't won the division under Vrabel, they still have two straight years of winning football at 9-7, including a wild card appearance in which they won two playoff games. And by the way, one of those wins was against the Patriots, the dynasty. So they beat them. And then they go and they beat the best team in football in the Ravens and knock them off. And both of those were on the road. I think that speaks volumes.
It absolutely does. And your poll question and the question that we brought up last week was right now, who is the best AFC South coach right now? Not what they've done in their career. Who would you take right now? And I would still stand by saying Mike Vrabel over any other coach in the AFC South.
I would, and I would agree with that. Now, I give Frank Reich a lot of credit. And Elijah, you said you voted Reich, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so why did you go Frank Reich? Because I'm not going to push back at you for that. I don't think that's a terrible vote.
I just think the player development thing, too. The Colts have been better when they're not supposed to be, you know. And right. I think with Bill O'Brien's thing, too, is, yeah, he won divisions, but the Colts and the Jags and Titans are mostly down in those years. I mean, his only obstacle was Andrew Luck.
Right.
During those. So, yeah, I mean, and the Sean Payton argument that Darren had is interesting. However, Sean Payton went 13-3 in what I feel like are better divisions than the AFC South has been historically in the last 3 or 4 years.
Sure. The NFC South has been murderer's row more times than not. So, and he won a Super Bowl. And you can always make the argument, okay, well, I mean, is that going to be how you end every argument? Well, they won a Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is the trump card. I mean, if you win a Super Bowl, then I don't think it really matters what else you've done. You have a Lombardi trophy. I mean, that's the bottom line. Like, that's something that Trent Dilfer over at Lipscomb can always say, yeah, I won the Super Bowl. You know, he's got that. You can bring up anything with anybody. If they have that ring, then I think that's very important. So
now, Chase, we also, both of us, reached out to Houston, Texas.
Yes,
last
we did.
Night.
We did. You reached out to a couple of contacts you have there. I on Twitter actually tweeted my poll at Sean Salisbury, who comes on with us quite a bit. And Sean, I said, "Hey, Sean Unfiltered, how would people in your market vote?" And he came back, Vrabel 1, Reich 2. And then somebody even replied with, "I'm so pissed B.O.B. wasn't last." like people in Houston hate him.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like him. Even mm-hmm. when he wins those divisions, they don't like him.
Right.
They want him gone.
And look, part of it is the fact that he's such a bad GM, but I will say the last impression that we have right now of Bill O'Brien as a coach is him kicking a field goal to go up 24-0 and not going for the kill shot to make it 28-0 in Kansas City on, I believe it was 4th-and-1. And then the next offensive series that they had after the Chiefs scored a touchdown to make it 24-7, you run a fake punt in your own territory on 4th-and-4. It fails miserably. And then the entire rest of the day is a miserable failure because then they could not stop a nosebleed when it came to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense.
Yeah. And the thing, I think the reason that I'm so mad at Bill O'Brien or Billy O is because had they won that game, the Titans would have gone to Houston in the AFC Championship game and beat the Texans and gone to the Super Bowl. I will stand by that. I can confirm that would have happened.
That would have been the ultimate trump card in this conversation too.
Right. The Titans would have beaten them.
Now, a Houston PD program director that I reached out to last night, I said, "How would Houston people vote for this?" And he said, "Certainly not for Bill O'Brien. His approval rating here is an F."
And I believe that. Now, I think some of that, and we've talked to multiple people other than Sean from Houston, and they all say the same thing, that Bill O'Brien's a jerk. I mean, he's not fun to deal with from a media standpoint, so I can understand. And that's important, Ryan. I mean, I remember when Mike Vrabel first got here, he had a little bit of that Belichick and, you know, I'm the man and you need to understand that I'm the man. And he realized that, okay, he's got to pump the brakes a little bit. And he did. And I thought in year two, he did a much better job, had a much better relationship with the media, because that's important. Because when things go well, great, things are going well. But when they don't, you need the media on your side to go, well, you know, the quarterback got hurt or the running back got hurt. You know, that you need somebody to defend you. With Bill O'Brien, they're going to, yeah, you made a dumb move. You made a dumb trade.
Sure, but I wouldn't say that the fact that Bill O'Brien is a jerk or that Mike Vrabel is a saint, I wouldn't say that factors into the fact that either of us would take Mike Vrabel as the coach, as our coach out of the AFC South. You know, you can be a jerk all you want as a head coach. If you win games, that's what matters. And Bill O'Brien has won games. To Darren's point, yes, they have won the division 4 out of 6 years, but the way things are trending right now, I will take Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, and I said a few weeks ago that the next goal for the Titans is to win the division. But I also, in that same breath, said, now in the grand scheme of things, all that matters is what you do in the playoffs. It doesn't, the regular season kind of matters, but once you get to postseason play, that's when you really have to do something. And I go back to that argument with Bill O'Brien and the Texans. He's been there 6 seasons. He's won 2 playoff games. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they've done. So Vrabel's been there 2 seasons and won 2 playoff games. Granted, it was in the same year, but the 9-7 Titans from year one, you know, were very, very close to being a playoff team. And under the new format, they will be, you know. So it's a fun argument. Especially right now. I respect Darren's opinion, and I'm sure, you know, if he's listening, I'm sure he's going to have a rebuttal at 10 o'clock, and I welcome it. But I stand by what I said and by the facts that I have presented, that right now, in the spirit of the question, which is right now in the AFC South, who would you take? And I, too, would take Mike Vrabel. So
add this one last caveat. This is kind of a mic drop for me. Bill O'Brien is the Dusty Baker of the National Football League.
That is a mic drop from you. Anybody that knows you knows that that is a mic drop for you. Darren, you're a witness. Oh, man, that's good. So, yeah, that was the poll question I put up. 77% picking Mike Vrabel. Are you working from home during the COVID-19 pandemic? Stream us anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable Alexa or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. It's The Rundown. Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. It is The Rundown, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. As I said, you can stream us on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Elijah Campbell back at the Wholesale Inc. Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. So, Ryan, we have had that question on all of our minds. Which league would be the first to come back? And I don't think we're going to know the answer to that for a few weeks. Now, I know Elijah was watching some Chinese baseball today because they're playing in an empty stadium. So, He's really excited that his Chinese baseball team is back. So,
oh yeah, the Racket and Monkeys won today, baby.
Oh man,
we're 2-0.
Are you getting the Racket and Monkeys, jersey and shirt and hat, and you're just going,
or perhaps
out with
a jersey?
Oh yeah, I'm a big jersey guy. I'm actually wearing a Kyrie Irving jersey right now, ironically enough.
Like,
but
that after
today, I mean, random. Number 85, first baseman Chu Yu Hsien hit a home run today, and big fan. I might have to order a CN jersey.
Are you going to pack or pick CN first in your fantasy baseball draft?
I don't see any other choice. I mean, he crushed it out to right field. They're down 2-1. That was technically the go-ahead score. They were up 10-2 in the eighth, so I assume they won. But I mean, if they didn't win, it's a total an absolute meltdown. Then that would only fit with a lot of my other fandoms in sports.
It would have been one of the biggest collapses in Chinese baseball history.
Exactly. Oh yeah, the biggest choke job in baseball in 2020 for sure.
This is where we are. So the PGA Tour has announced an updated schedule, Ryan. June 8th through the 14th, they are scheduled as of now to pick up their season with the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial in Fort Worth. Now, originally, they had wanted to do that in mid-May. I think it was May 18th through the 24th. And so they've now adjusted some things. They canceled the RBC Canadian Open, which was originally June 8th through the 14th. And so right now, the PGA Tour is going to start with the Charles Schwab, but the first four events will be without fans. Do you think that when we get to June 8th, they will be playing golf at Colonial?
Oh, very good question. I'm going to say yes, because there's no fans involved. I'm going to say that. Now, granted, we have to keep in mind that other leagues around the country that were ahead of this experienced the coronavirus pandemic before it came to America, like in China, you know, the Chinese Basketball League has wanted to make comebacks and they keep pushing it back. So would it surprise me? Absolutely not. If, you know, there's no golf even without fans until maybe July. But I think it is encouraging and a little exciting, especially for golf fans, that the PGA Tour comes out today and says, here is our revised schedule for the rest of this calendar year. And, you know, Chase, the 1920 PGA Tour season schedule ends in September. And the interesting thing about this is the way they've reshuffled the schedule with the Masters and the U.S. Open both being in the fall. So the U.S. Open at Winged Foot in September, and then the Masters at Augusta in November. If I read this correctly, the 2020-2021 PGA Tour season schedule would feature two U.S. Opens and two Masters tournaments.
That'd be pretty cool if all goes to plan. Because the PGA would be August 3 through 9th, so the PGA would be the first major. They won't play the Open, the British Open. So they would only have three majors this year. And did they get the players in? Or did that get canceled? Which is the unofficial fifth?
I think that got canceled.
I think it did.
Yeah, I think that was next up within a couple weeks after sports shut down.
Yeah.
I think that was coming up pretty quick. If I remember correctly, it was one of the first tournaments I think that got postponed.
So
also, you can notice in this schedule, if you haven't seen it yet, you can go to our Twitter account at 1025 The Game. We retweeted the PGA this morning. None of these tournaments before September for the rest of this season schedule are outside of the United States.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think right now you just have to keep everything here.
Yep.
And then, you know, reevaluate as we learn more. Now, the reason that I'm going to say that it does happen is because of some of the comments of Dr. Fauci that he said yesterday or the day before about that he believes sports can return if the, you know, if they understand that fans won't be there, that it's got to be empty venues, empty stadiums. You know, the golf course is different. You know, we've talked about NASCAR on our show of, you know, can they do it at empty racetracks? And so I think that that has to be the understanding. And with leagues like the NHL or the NBA or even the NFL, baseball, players have to quarantine. I mean, you have to pretty much put all the players in one place and keep them isolated and then play out the season. So that gives me a glimmer of hope that this schedule can actually happen and they can actually live up to this and play all these events.
Yeah, there are a couple differences within, you know, the PGA coming back and say the NHL or the NBA or Major League Baseball coming back in quarantined areas. Those leagues that we're talking about are, you know, drumming up ideas of quarantining in Arizona or North Dakota or Vegas, whereas there is still a lot of travel involved with this PGA schedule. On the flip side, it is a lot easier to social distance within golf and on golf courses than it would be for inside, you know, a smaller arena in North Dakota or Vegas or a spring training stadium in Arizona.
Yeah, and so with the fans, I mean, I know they noticed the fans, but golf, you're so dialed into, you're trying to tune out the noise anyway, so I think it'll be easier for that. Now, I don't know what they're going to do without the get in the hole guy. I know that's going to be quite an adjustment. They're not going to have somebody yelling every time, or that. Like, oh, what are they going to do without that guy? But Ian Ayer, the CEO of Nashville SC, I know was asked about, you know, what it would be like playing in empty stadiums. Here's what he had to say.
I have to say, as a sports fan and a soccer fan particularly, it's hard to even contemplate, but you know, needs must, I guess. It's certainly, whether you're Don Garber or Ian Ayer or anyone else, it's not what anyone wants. I think we can all be assured of that. And it's not what anyone's hoping for. But you know, I think if we asked anyone, if that was the only choice, you know, would you rather that than what we're doing right now, which is no live sport? So I think it's a lesser of two evils to some degree. And I think, you know, as I was just saying before, I think if you're going to plan for every outcome, then you have to plan for every outcome and even the ones that you don't really like. But, you know, the one you just described of having games with no fans is at least a step up from where we are today. So no, I can't imagine it, but I have to, you know, it's kind of my job to try and imagine it, unfortunately, because it may at some point be the only solution, at least for a period of time.
I think he said it best. I mean, that's kind of how you have to look at it, Ryan. Nobody
lesser
wants that.
Angles. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, nobody wants that, but you want sports back. And especially if we're, you know, if we're all going to still have to be at our homes and working for home, let's say for another couple of months, wouldn't you rather have something to watch? Mm-hmm. I mean, we joked Elijah's watching Chinese baseball, which, you know, that's the question. Are you going to watch sports in other countries if other countries are bringing sports back and they're available to you? I think I'm probably going to check it out.
Are you?
I'm bored. I mean, I am. It's like it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, I like to place a wager every now and then. Doesn't have to anything to do with that. It's okay. Just I'm not. Look, I don't know anything about
Chinese
baseball.
Are you
going to
place a wager on the monkeys?
No, I'm
highly recommend it.
I know somebody that might, but I won't.
I think we both know that individual.
But I believe that they need to do something, whether it's, you know, for an economic standpoint or simply just their sanity. So yes, I'm going to watch another sport in another country. I'm going to at least check it out.
Yeah, and I think it's been interesting, the timing of this week, where you start hearing the president, you start hearing Dr. Fauci mention sports potentially coming back at some point, where in the last couple of weeks that really hasn't been a conversation at their levels. You know, we talk about it and we see NHL and MLB, you know, experts coming out and saying, you know, these leagues are thinking about this. But the fact that Dr. Fauci said that yesterday and said that sports could return without fans at some point, and that Donald Trump is beating the drum of this nation needing sports, you know, just for, you know, economic reasons and for our pure sanity as a society for a lot of the people. I could foresee in June and July some of these leagues returning. You know, Major League Soccer came out yesterday and said that they're postponing their return to at least June 8th. PGA Tour's return, scheduled return, is June 8th, which makes me wonder if on that call...
Is that the target?
Right. On that call with Donald Trump and the commissioners and sports that he had within the last couple weeks, I wonder within that call, you know, if Dr. Fauci was a part of that call as well. I don't know, but I wonder within that call if they said, you know what, June 8th, let's target June 8th as kind of our first target to bring some of these leagues back.
Yeah, and look, I know that it's a dangerous game to put a date on something, mm-hmm. because you're just setting people up, you know, for potential disappointment if you say, yeah, well, we said June 8th, but it's going to be July 8th. But at the same time, I would rather know that there's a conversation and there is a target date in mind than not know. That's just my personal opinion. So this is all encouraging that there's a schedule now for the PGA, that you have conversations that are taking place. I know that the president has formed a committee and he's going to be relying on these commissioners. I even saw that Bob Kraft and Jerry Jones were a part of it too. So I believe that that is, you know, what they need to do. I think President Trump knows the importance of sports in this country. He's made a lot of money off of it with different events and being a part of things. So he understands it. It's going to be good for everybody. And I just believe it's going to be an ongoing conversation. RockNashville.com is your community resource page, brought to you by 102.5 The Game and Cromwell Media. Many local businesses in Middle Tennessee are still open and ready to serve you during these uncertain times. Help them out by visiting RockNashville.com for delivery, pickup options, fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and more. We got this, Nashville. Support your local businesses. Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, The Rundown, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5, The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. I'm Chase McCabe alongside Ryan Porth. Darren Donick and Chase coming up at 10 o'clock. We have a great show for you on that. I told you Shea Weber was going to join us at noon, but before that, Dan Wolkin, USA Today, Adam Kaplan talking NFL, and then our weekly with Elliot Friedman later on at 1 o'clock. So big show today on Darren Donick and Chase. Ryan, you have done a fantastic job of putting a quarantine question of the day up on our Twitter account every day during this mess. And I thought that yesterday's and today's, they were both very, very intriguing. Yesterday's, best arena stadium that you've ever visited.
I answered it as Fenway Park. And that is no slight to any of the other arenas and stadiums that I have visited over the years. But Fenway Park, there was just something special about the visit to Fenway. I love everything there is about the stadium, everything there is about its history, the Green Monster, the Monster Seats. My dad and I went back in 2014 to see the Reds play the Red Sox at Fenway, and you know, it was a tremendous experience, one I'll never forget. And you know, I visited Fenway as a kid and didn't really remember it all that much, and the neighborhood around it with all the baseball bars, it's a really, really cool spot. So I would say Fenway Park.
Yeah, I haven't been to Wrigley or Fenway yet, so I don't have those two historic baseball parks.
And Wrigley's great too. Wrigley is certainly up there.
I went to Shea was a dump, so I mean, that there just wasn't really much to Shea.
Shea Weber?
Yeah, well, there's a lot to Shea Weber. But,
okay.
You're not going to like my answer because of your allegiances with your baseball team. But
oh, no.
New Busch Stadium was really, really, really nice. And of all the ballparks that I've been to, I think that that one is at the top of the list. Now, Colorado Coors Field in Colorado, close second. Really nice, intimate ballpark. I like the smaller parks, or the ones that feel smaller, that you just, you're surround, you know, you can hear the noise, you can hear the ball hit the back of the glove and the crack of the bat, and it's just the ball carries there because of the high elevation. So it was nice, but I have to go Busch Stadium.
Okay. So you would say that is the best stadium you have ever visited?
Yeah, I mean, because I haven't been to a ton of NFL stadiums. Bryant-Denny was cool, you know, in Alabama.
I'll say this. Bryant-Denny for the Iron Bowl is an experience. It was – I'm getting goosebumps right now just thinking about it.
See, I went and they were playing, like, you know, some no-name FCS team. And so I mean, it was loud at the beginning, but then everybody left.
Yeah, I was at the Iron Bowl where Dixieland Delight, it was the last time that they played Dixieland Delight. And if you want to know why, you can just find that on YouTube. It was that one is up there for sure. And you know what? In our backyard, Bridgestone Arena, there isn't a better run arena than Bridgestone Arena, especially the game night experience inside that venue. So
it's true. I didn't want to. I excluded that because that's the hometown rink.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, that's for hockey. Now, I had I thought that Colorado's experience was good. I really like that rink and how they do their game ops. So I would say of the other ones that now Winnipeg was awesome. I will say that Winnipeg was cool because it's so small and that's all they have.
It's also cool because the weather is cold.
Yes, it's chilly there, but that. I will put Winnipeg up there just from a fan experience because that's all they have. And so they are all in on the Jets. So that was definitely neat in the playoffs to be a part of in the whiteout. All right, now the question that you have up there today quickly is the movie, if you can only watch one movie the rest of quarantine, it's what was number one at the box office on your birthday, the day you were born.
Mine is Look Who's Talking, October 24th, 1989.
Oh, I love that movie.
I've never seen it.
Travolta. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. I've never seen it. So on brand.
Mine
so add that to the list.
Mine is Dragnet. And I can only imagine that it's not great. But it was number one on my birthday. So
have you seen it?
I have not.
Oh, a movie that you haven't seen.
No. I've seen the TV show. But
okay.
I haven't seen the movie. So
all right. Elijah, Elijah, do you have yours?
Batman Forever.
Nice.
Ooh. Yeah, the one with Jim Carrey as the Riddler and Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face.
Elijah, you are young.
Would you like to guess the year?
97.
No.
95?
Correct.
95.
1995.
Thank you for depressing me as we
understand. And on that note.
Yeah, we got to go now. I need a break for a second. That's going to do it for the rundown. For Ryan Porth, for Elijah Campbell, the young one, I'm Chase McCabe. We will talk to you tomorrow at 9 a.m. on ESPN 102.5 The Game.